Today on Dana's Low Carb for Life, we're going to talk Halloween strategies, pumpkin plans, and crunchy food. So stick around. You are listening to Dana's Low Carb for Life. Hey, gang. Welcome to episode 29 of Dana's Low Carb for Life, brought to you by CarbSmart.com, your smart choice for a low-carb lifestyle. If you're listening to this sometime in the indefinite future, as I am recording this, it is the second week of October, and we're going to be darned seasonal today. So, if you're listening in January or May or something, you'll just have to keep these thoughts in the back of your mind for next fall. What are our seasonal topics? Well, first of all, I'm going to talk about how to survive the scariest day of the year, Halloween. No, I'm not talking about the costumes and the spooky decorations and the haunted houses and the movies and all that stuff. I'm talking about all that candy. How are you going to get through Halloween with both your waistline and your resolve intact? I'll be talking hardcore strategy here. I'll also be opining on the subject of how Halloween is celebrated. Gee, me have an opinion? Who'd have thunk it? Then I'm going to talk about that most seasonal of vegetables, the pumpkin. I am very fond of pumpkin, and while it's carbier than leafy greens and cucumbers and celery and stuff like that, it can still fit into our low-carb menu. I'll give you the digits on the big orange vegetable and also give you some ideas for cooking them. And finally, we have got a great post from a listener answering the question, what are your favorite low-carb crunchy foods? Some wonderful ideas here on Low Carb Voices, including one that I have never tried, but I do have to because it sounds great. You're going to want to hear about that. So let's get right to it. Let's talk about Halloween, both for you and for your kids. But first, I'm going to have a hit on this cup of tea. This recording is thirsty work. A few years ago, there was this online discussion of Halloween plans, and I first encountered the concept of trunk or treat, a Halloween event that is apparently gaining popularity across the country. People dress their kids up in costumes, pack candy in their car trunks, and then go to a pre-designated parking lot where the children run from car to car collecting candy. Call me a fossil. I'm just over a week away from my 53rd birthday, as I recall this, but it seems entirely wrong-headed to me. Trunk or Treat takes all the spooky fun and all of the exercise out of trick-or-treating while leaving all the sugar. Indeed, it reinforces the idea that the best thing, the most important thing, the most fun thing about Halloween, the thing that Halloween is all about, is the candy. Yeah, all you 20 and 30-somethings are rolling your eyes at yet another old person saying, well, when I was your age. Well, please, bear with me. My best, my brightest Halloween memories do not have to do with candy, although I was certainly a little sugar junkie. My best Halloween memories have to do with the actual trick-or-treating, with the excitement of being out after dark, running door-to-door, fallen leaves crackling underfoot, pumpkins glowing everywhere, seeing the Halloween decorations at each house, ringing the doorbells, shouting, trick-or-treat! And then the repeated oh-ing and ah-ing over all of our costumes. All that stuff. But Dana, I hear you cry. It's a different world. It's too dangerous to let our kids do that. Actually, according to the reports I have read, there is no more crime against children today than there was in my childhood. It's the reporting of crime, thanks to all the 24-hour news networks, and therefore the perception of crime that has drastically increased. How about the risk of poison candy? Ignoring entirely that the candy itself is poison, Snopes.com reports that not a single case of Halloween candy poisoning has ever been verified. The only cases we have of poison Halloween candy that actually happened were parents who wanted to poison their own children and pass it off as the act of some random madman, which is disheartening to think about, but makes it a little less scary to let your kids take candy from strangers. And what's to keep some madman from bringing poison candy to trunk or treat? I mean, really. Well, none of this reassurance matters a whit if no one in your neighborhood participates in trick-or-treat anymore. Nobody trick-or-treats in my neighborhood. No use sending your little goblins to houses where no one is prepared. Well, geez then, Dana, why'd you bring it up? Because it is clear to me that Halloween traditions in this country are shifting. They are in flux, and they have yet to settle on a new form. This means that you have input into what the new traditions are going to be. Aha, you have an opportunity here. I'm hoping I can encourage you in some direction other than trunk or treat. My vote would be a return to the Halloween party, with spooky games, music, at least some non-candy food. Read ghost stories by firelight. My mother used to do this on Girl Scout camping trips, and it was dynamite. Bob for apples, carve jack-o'-lanterns, have a scary laugh contest and a costume judging with lots and lots of prizes, by the way. Have a costume for the scariest costume, prettiest, funniest, most creative, most recyclable, least likely to be worn to a funeral, whatever. The more kids get prizes, the better. If you have space, how about creating a haunted house or a haunted woodlands or something like that in your backyard? I have a big backyard that with a path through the woods that would be absolutely perfect for this, but alas, I have no children. The drawback to this is that private parties are invitation-only events, of course, and kids could get left out, you know, and having been the unpopular kid, I'm sensitive to this. This is a great reason for organizations, from scout troops to neighborhood associations, to create their own everybody welcome Halloween events. Well, if you are still in a trick-or-treat part of the country, let me make a few gentle suggestions. First of all, focus as much attention as you can on the many fun and creative activities of Halloween that don't involve sugar. Help your kids make their own costumes instead of going out and buying or renting them. Decorate your house. Make styrofoam tombstones with funny epitaphs for the front lawn. We did this, and it is so easy. You just cut a shape out of, you know, 2-inch thick styrofoam, write something on it, a magic marker, put a couple of sharpened dowels in the bottom and stick it in the lawn. Go to the library and take out a recording of haunted house sounds and play it, you know, on a speaker out the window for the kids coming to the house. Watch some spooky movies with an eye to the movie's scare and violence level and your kids' ages, obviously. Make the fun of Halloween about something more than just the sugar is the point there. Consider handing out something other than candy. And I think this is a great idea in general. And it would, of course, also get us past that phantom fear of poison candy. My sister, who's a teacher, has been known to go to the teacher supply store and buy little prizes in bulk. She'll buy, you know, little erasers in fun shapes or stickers or little toys of various kinds. And she hands those out for trick-or-treat, and she reports the kids like it very much. Hands full of pennies have gone over well. So have individual packets of peanuts. Now, some of you are thinking, yeah, but what about peanut allergies? Does that keep anybody from giving out Snickers and Butterfinger? Okay, you know? I don't think it does. Back when I lived in a trick-or-treating neighborhood, and I live out in the country now where there are no trick-or-treaters because there's too few houses and way too much space between them. But back when I did live in a trick-or-treating neighborhood, I would let kids grab a double handful from a basket of peanuts in the shell. And believe it or not, kids generally exclaimed, "Oh, peanuts!" Not, "Hey, lady, where's the candy?" Warning, do not do what Dr. Sinclair, my childhood dentist and next-door neighbor, did and hand out toothbrushes. This is a sure way to get egged and teepeed both. Now, if you do decide you got to give out candy, buy candy you don't personally care for. Don't get your own particular kryptonite. For instance, if I were giving out candy, that chance, I'd consider Twizzlers, Chuckles, or candy corn, none of which I have ever liked. This way, you are far less likely to binge between trick-or-treaters. If you foolishly insist on buying your own very favorite candy for trick-or-treat, buy the minimum you can get away with. I've known plenty of moms to give in to the candy binge as a consequence of, oh, I have to make sure I have enough, leading to bags and bags of leftover Snickers bars come November 1st. If you do wind up with leftover candy, take it to work and leave it in the break room. And if you don't work outside the house, give it to your spouse to take and leave at the break room. In the meanwhile, lay in a modest stash of sugar-free candy. Now, I generally keep both sugar-free Reese's mini peanut butter cups and sugar-free Hershey's dark miniatures in the house. You can also get all kinds of wonderful sugar-free candy, of course, from our sponsor, CarbSmart.com. And Dove has very good sugar-free candy. So just, you know, look around. Russell Stover makes sugar-free candy. Having your own treats will help keep you away from the kids' goodie bags. And the laxative quality of the sugar-free candy will prevent your pigging out on it. Or at least will prevent your pigging out on it more than once. If you're concerned about your kids' sugar intake, and you should be, consider having a talk with them in advance about some sort of strategy to minimize the damage. I've known families where they let the kids choose their 5 or maybe 10 favorite kinds of candy, and anything they collect that's not on that list, not one of their absolute designated favorites, goes in the trash. Maybe you could freeze most of their haul and dole it out over the winter piece by piece. But please, don't simply let them devour it all in a few days' time. That's the best advice I have for you, and I hope you have a super fun and super spooky Halloween. Me, I have recently gotten a great collection of great old 1930s horror movies on video at my Goodwill, and I think I will be revisiting Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein and maybe Todd Browning's Freaks. I have a weird thing for old 30s horror movies. Well, pretty soon we're going to get to low-carb voices and those ideas for low-carb crunchy foods, but first, since we've talked about Halloween, I thought we could stick with the seasonal theme and talk about pumpkins. You know it's autumn when fresh pumpkins show up in the grocery store. That's, you know, one of the clear signs. Sadly, around here, fresh pumpkins are only available from late September through Thanksgiving. Apparently, most people only use pumpkins for pie or for decorations during the autumn and don't actually make use of it as a vegetable. And this is a darn shame. Have you tried fresh pumpkin as a vegetable? It's wonderful. It's really good. It's also one of the lower carb of the winter squashes. The lowest carb winter squash is spaghetti squash, but as you know, it doesn't have the texture of your standard winter squash. If you're a winter squash fan, pumpkin is a good bet. Pumpkin is also one of the best sources of pro vitamin A, substances your body can then convert into true vitamin A. Despite what you may have heard, no plant food contains true vitamin A. True vitamin A only comes from animal foods, which is one of the reasons animal foods are good for you. One of the many reasons animal foods are good for you. But pro-vitamin A is good stuff. Vitamin A is, of course, an important antioxidant that's essential to your immune system. It's also known to play a key role in eye health, and it's essential for good night vision. A deficiency of vitamin A can cause dry eyes and may promote cataracts. So that thing your mother always told you about carrots being good for your eyes actually has a little bit of truth to it. 1 cup of cooked mashed pumpkin has 12,230 IUs of provitamin A. It also has calcium, iron, protein, vitamin C, and 9.3 grams of usable carb with 49 calories. Now, 9.3 grams is, you know, fair amount, but you could have a half a cup of pumpkin, and, you know, that would fit into most people's carb allowance unless you're on induction. For cooking, you want to look for small pumpkins around 2 to 3 pounds. They're easier to handle, and you're more likely to eat them up. Furthermore, they tend to be grown more for flavor than they are for their size. The jack-o'-lantern pumpkins, of course, are grown largely as decorations. I hate it when stuff goes bad in the fridge, so the fact that it's easier to use up one of the little pumpkins is a big thing. Whole pumpkins will keep for weeks in a cool place. That's one of the reasons they're winter squashes. They're the squashes you could keep through the winter. But once you cut a whole pumpkin, you need to cook it soon. I have kept leftover raw pumpkin for a day or two in a Ziploc bag in the refrigerator, but that's about it. So be aware of that. If you can't find fresh pumpkin or you don't want to, you don't want to cook one, canned pumpkin is, of course, available in most parts of the country year-round. But chunks and slices and wedges of pumpkin are so wonderful, you really ought to try it at least once. Are you still not sure what you're going to do with a pumpkin other than sticking a candle inside it? Well, here are some delicious ideas to get you cooking. Really simple is to just dice it into chunks, steam it as a vegetable, spice it with a little nutmeg, and put some butter on it, and that works great. Cream of pumpkin soup. Now, this you can make with canned pureed pumpkin. Cream of pumpkin soup is wonderful, especially with a little curry powder in it. This would make a nice starter for Thanksgiving dinner, actually. To be fancy, you could serve it in little hollowed out pumpkins. I know people who do this, people who have greater presentation skills than I. Run one or two chipotle peppers, depending on how hot you like things, run one or two chipotle peppers through your food processor or your blender, along with a half a cup of sugar-free pancake syrup and about a half a teaspoon or so of salt or soy sauce. Now, roast wedges of fresh pumpkin at 350 degrees, basting frequently with the chipotle syrup mixture until they're soft. You can serve this as a side dish, and it's fabulous. This is also great done on the grill with the lid down, so if it's still nice enough for grilling where you are, you might try that. By the way, you don't have to copy all this down. This is all going to be on the transcript at the show page, danaslowcarbforlife.com. Half cubed fresh pumpkin and half cubed rutabaga makes a great substitute for cubed sweet potato in any stew or soup recipes you might have that call for sweet potato. One cup of cubed sweet potato has 22.8 grams of usable carb, while one cup of the 50-50 pumpkin and rutabaga mixture has just 7.5 grams of usable carb per cup. So the carb savings here is significant. A can of pumpkin mixed with one mashed sweet potato and then seasoned makes a good sweet potato casserole, sort of, with fewer carbs if you want to do something like that for a holiday dinner. Diluting the sweet potato carbs with pumpkin works well. Please remember, there is no law requiring you to put marshmallows in every sweet potato dish under the sun. You can toss chunks of pumpkin into your pot roast along with the carrots and the turnips, and that's very good. Make your favorite pumpkin pie recipe, but use your favorite sugar-free sweetener in place of sugar. I've been making Splenda sweetened pumpkin pie for years and years and years now, and it's wonderful. You can add a little bit of sugar-free pancake syrup for a New England touch, and that's very good as well. You can also, by the way, bake the pumpkin pie filling just as a custard by itself, and that's very good. Don't throw away the pumpkin seeds. Pumpkin seeds are also low carb. They are one of my favorite snacks. They are so much better roasted fresh than bought in little packets at the grocery store or the convenience store. You pick off any major strings, toss the seeds with a little oil and salt, and roast them at 300 degrees for about 45 minutes. I don't rinse the pumpkin juice off of them. I find that that caramelized pumpkin juice adds a really delicious flavor to the pumpkin seeds. I eat these with the shells and all, which God only knows how much fiber I get that way. Of course, you can find pumpkin seeds roasted and salted in the shell in most convenience stores and mini marts. If you are, like me, eating gluten-free, read the labels. The white ones have some kind of starch caked on them, and you want to make sure it's not wheat. Health food stores and Hispanic markets carry hulled pumpkin seeds already out of the shells. These are often labeled pepitas, and these are really useful. You can roast and season them for snacks. I also have been known to run shelled pumpkin seeds through the food processor to make pumpkin seed meal, just like you would have almond meal or hazelnut meal. This is a great substitute for almond meal in low-carb baking, should you happen to have a nut allergy. Now, I haven't tried anything like all of my baking allergies. All my baking recipes with the pumpkin seed meal instead of the almond meal, but all the ones I've tried have worked out. 1 ounce of shelled pumpkin seeds has 4 grams of usable carb, along with healthy monounsaturated fats, protein, and some really good doses of zinc and magnesium. Now, I'm going to recite a recipe for you here that I am repeating courtesy of my publisher, and it will also be up on, again, danaslowcarbforlife.com on the transcript. This side dish makes use of both pumpkin and of shelled pumpkin seeds. Buy already shelled pumpkin seeds to make this and roast the seeds out of your pumpkin as a snack. You know, don't shell a half a cup of pumpkin seeds before dinner. That's a big job. So this is a recipe for chili lime pumpkin. You take one little pumpkin, about 2 pounds worth, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of oil. I would probably use coconut oil, 1/2 cup of shelled pumpkin seeds, 1 teaspoon of chili garlic paste, and this is an Asian condiment, sometimes labeled chili garlic sauce. Look in the Asian section of the grocery store. And 2 teaspoons of lime juice. And you whack the pumpkin in half, scoop out the seeds, peel off the hard rind, and then you cut the flesh into slices about 1/4 inch thick. Put the butter and the oil into a big heavy skillet over medium heat and swirl the 2 kinds of fat together as that butter melts. Now, lay the slices of pumpkin flat in the butter-oil mixture and sauté until it's lightly golden on both sides and tender, but still al dente. You don't want it to be really mushy. You'll need to do this in more than one batch because a whole pumpkin slices up into more pumpkin than you can fit in your skillet at one time, unless you got a way bigger skillet than I do. Keep the stuff that's done warm on a plate under a pot lid. And while you're busy sautéing pumpkin, toast your pepitas, your pumpkin seeds, shell pumpkin seeds, by stirring them in a dry skillet over medium-high heat until they just swell a little bit. It's interesting. They'll kind of puff. It'll take about 4 to 5 minutes. Remove those from the heat when they're done. Now, when the pumpkin's all cooked, put it all back in the skillet together. Mix together the chili garlic paste and the lime juice. Gently mix that in, coating all of the pumpkin slices. Then lay your pumpkin slices on the serving plates and top each serving with 1 tablespoon of the toasted pumpkin seeds and serve. This makes 8 servings, so it's a good, interesting dish to make for a dinner party, a holiday dinner party. Each serving will have 89 calories with 5 grams of fat, 2 grams of protein, 10 grams of carbohydrate, 1 gram of dietary fiber, 9 grams usable carb. And this is a really nice thing to serve in place of the ubiquitous potato. I mean, you know, come on. Far more interesting. This is reprinted and read to you from 500 more low-carb recipes by Dana Carpenter, and it's by permission of my publisher, Fairwinds Press. So, go eat some pumpkin! I'm going to stash a few in a cool place in my house and enjoy them well into the winter. I, at this juncture, before we do low-carb voices, need to pour another cup of tea. So hold on a second. Here is my tea. I'm recording this in the morning, and I have not yet absorbed enough caffeine for the day. Okay. Got a fresh cup of tea. Take a slurp. Okay, time for low-carb voices. The question last episode was, what do you eat when you want something crunchy? Potato chips, pretzels, Doritos, they're all out, and people frequently complain that they miss crunchy foods on a low-carb diet. Well, a listener named Laura posted some great ideas at the show page, danaslowcarbforlife.com. I keep reminding you. So Laura writes, crunchy and usually salty snacks. One, she says, I make pepperoni chips by putting pepperoni on a paper plate and microwaving for 30 seconds to a minute. Then I blot with paper towels and let cool a little. They are crunchy and good. And that's, by the way, all capital letters, G-O-O-D, with 4 exclamation points. So this is really good. And it sounds fantastic. This is something I've never thought of and never done. And I feel like really, really enlightened now. And I have to try this. In fact, this afternoon, I'm going to go out and buy some pepperoni and try this. And I happen to think that pepperoni chips would be especially good with a little bit of whipped cream cheese on them. What do you think? Okay. She also says she uses crispy bacon, pork rinds with cinnamon and sweetener. Now, those of you who have not tried pork rinds with cinnamon and sweetener are wrinkling your noses and thinking she's nuts. But I am telling you, this is really good. I've done these. I usually use about 1/4 cup of granular Splenda with a half a teaspoon of cinnamon to a big bag of pork rinds. You stir the sweetener, and you could use another sweetener. Stir the sweetener and the cinnamon together. Dump them in the pork rind bag and shake it up. You probably wouldn't want to use one of the really granular sweeteners. I don't think that Truvia, for instance, would work well in this because I think the erythritol is too heavy to stick easily to the pork rinds. But I suspect that stevia in the raw would work with this. Anyway, if you miss sort of sweet, cinnamony, crunchy things like graham crackers, you really have to try the cinnamon and sweetener pork rinds. They are so good. Laura continues, your crunchy chicken skins. For those of you who don't know, I have long advocated making what I call chicken chips. And every time I mention chicken chips at my Facebook fan page, Dana Carpenter's Hold the Toast Press, and you should go sign up at go become a fan of my fan page. Anyway, every time I mention chicken chips, somebody will say, what's a chicken chip? How do I make them? So I will tell you, anytime you have a recipe that calls for taking the skin off your chicken before you cook it. And I do this really with almost any recipe where it's going to be cooked moist heat because the chicken skin's just going to come out flabby and boring and I'd rather turn it into chicken chips. So what you do is you take all that chicken skin and you lay it flat on your broiler rack and then you bake it at 350 for about 20 minutes or until it's really crunchy and golden. Then you salt it and you stuff it in your face and oh my gosh, it's good. It is amazing. In fact, I now have one fan who has written me on Facebook that she is having her local grocery store meat manager, save her bags of chicken skin just to make chicken chips from. So Laura says she loves the crunchy chicken skins, and you will too if you haven't tried them. But she also says they go too fast, and I love skin on my chicken, so I don't get many that I can use just for skin. So Laura, go talk to your meat manager. See if he can save you some skins. She also says she likes grated cheese melted on parchment paper in the microwave, and says she usually adds salt to this. I have done this too, and it's very, very good. You need to use grated cheese, shredded cheese, that you didn't buy pre-grated, I find, because the stuff that comes pre-grated in pouches or tubs generally has some cellulose added to it, and therefore will come out funny. So just take your block of cheddar or Monterey Jack or Parmesan or whatever and shred it onto that parchment paper, or I use a microwavable plate sprayed with Pam, and then nuke it on high for like a handful of cheese. I find a minute to a minute and a half on high is plenty, and then let it cool, and it will come out incredibly crunchy and, of course, extremely cheesy. These are really nice, by the way, crumbled up on a salad. They make a really good crouton substitute. And Laura also says she likes nuts. We all like nuts. Nuts are one of my favorites. And then her last one is raw broccoli and cauliflower are now the substitute for potato chips in my husband's lunch. He's been doing low or lower carb now for 2 to 3 months, and he has lost 20 pounds. Not fair. Guys do lose easier than girls do, usually. It's just hormonal, guys, and I can't fix it. And then she goes on to say, love your show, Dana Carpenter. You are awesome. Well, thanks. And Laura, you are awesome. Thanks for all these great ideas, and especially for that pepperoni thing, because, hey, I hadn't thought of it. And I'm going to go out and make those today and try them with the cream cheese. How bad can it be, as my mother would have said. Given this week's show, I think this week's question has to be, how are you going to keep Halloween low or lower carb for you and for your family? Any great ideas you have, we would love to hear them. And obviously, this is a very seasonal topic. It's time bound. So if you have an idea, don't delay. Get it to us in time for the next show. If you've got any other ideas to share, if you want to tell us about crunchy stuff, if you have a question, a recipe, an idea for a low-carb treat, really anything you want to share with the low-carb community, call 412-385-DANA. That's 412-385-3262, and let us know. If you have any friends you think might like the show, please steer them to the show page at danaslowcarbforlife.com. And if you like the show, how about leaving a review at iTunes? We love the reviews at iTunes. Again, don't forget to check out the blog at holdthetoast.com. I do spontaneously throw up recipes from time to time. Join my Facebook fan page at Dana Carpenter's Hold the Toast Press. There's a lot of really great folks on the fan page at Facebook. It's a lot of fun there. It's a great ongoing conversation. And you can also, of course, find links to other places in the low-carb community. By the way, there are a lot of links to other places in the low-carb community at the blog as well. Any good blog has a blog role, and of course I do too. And of course, 300 low-carb slow cooker recipes is now available at Amazon.com, or you can order it through CarbSmart.com along with your other stuff. And of course, we still like you to buy 315-minute low-carb recipes. If you've got either of the books and you like them, please go review them at Amazon.com. If you hate them, please keep your mouth shut. That's it. And remember, till next show, stay low-carb for life.
This is Dana Carpenter saying thanks for listening. If you like today's show, please leave a review at the iTunes store. You can always leave questions and comments at 412-385-DANA or write us at feedback@danaslowcarbforlife.com. For complete show notes, please visit our site at www.danaslowcarbforlife.com and don't forget to visit the blog at holdthetoast.com. Special thanks to Disc of Light Media and our sponsor, CarbSmart.com.